Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
Okay, folks. Welcome back to Applebee's. You know, it's your number one unrefined and absolutely exhausted motorsports podcast. We're here after a weekend that a lot of stuff happened. Man, I can't even get out of the funk that I've been in all day from watching fucking 8 hours of racing yesterday. Let alone all the shit that happened all weekend. How are you guys doing? As again, I'm here with Rob and Ashley.
I'm tired too, buddy. Definitely got unnecessarily shithoused last night. We'll get into it in a second, but there was no reason for my behavior down here in the basement.
Well, I mean, you know, you had a frustrating day. You had to miss most of the 500 due to work, which was, you know, even though it's President's Day, I knew a lot of people did have to work. Yeah. Meanwhile, a friend, Mike, from First 7-Inch Club, took the whole day off thinking he was going to watch Xfinity and then the 500, and then he just had nothing to do all day. So,
yeah.
A lot of different situations for people. It was a weird day, but True Love, how was your day? You were pretty silent, although I know you're very intense when you're watching some races sometimes.
Yeah,
so that's
hard for me to multitask. I can't type and have a nervous breakdown at the same time while watching my programs.
Hey, Chase got a stage win yesterday. That was pretty cool.
He did. That was it was exciting. Blaney got one too. Yeah, I'm just kind of mentally exhausted from the entire weekend.
Yeah.
And I also raw dogged it sober, so.
Oh.
There's that.
Lord. My goodness.
I mean, it was a pace yourself day yesterday, but yeah, I couldn't have done that without at least a little bit of alcohol. Oof.
Well, you texted us last night. It was like, I forgot how you worded it, but I'm sassy drunk now. I'm talking shit. And just proceeded to unload.
Yeah, well, I forget what the context was exactly.
It was I think it was the finish, which we'll definitely get to that eventually. But, ugh.
Yeah, well, before we dive into everything that happened over the weekend, I know last week on the show we mentioned, you know, Ashley was making this big trip to Charlotte, and she was going to be interviewed by Fox and be on the pre-race show.
That's right.
And once we saw that footage, I would be reposting it immediately. And if you notice on Instagram, there was no footage because, unfortunately, Ashley, explain what happened.
Snip, snip, snip. The cutting room floor.
Did not make the cut.
Did you cuss? What did you say?
I was surprised. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
Did you berate one of the children from the segment?
Well, give us a synopsis of what happened. I mean, obviously you traveled down to Charlotte and you know, you went to a studio that was owned by Joey Logano to film this. Yeah. So tell us some more.
It was it's a very nice studio. It's like a legit, you had to ring a bell to get in, and I could see in through the window and saw that how legit it was and how many people were in there. And
there's liquor stores like that too.
A panic attack. It was like, what have I done? I regret everything. Maybe I should turn and leave right now.
I mean.
I was very nervous. Everyone was so nice. All the assistants, the producer lady, all the camera guys, all super nice. It was a very chill environment. Everyone was great, but it was.
Yeah. And this was your first.
Very legit.
Your first, real on camera, under the lights kind of experience, right?
I don't even post videos of myself on social media because I don't like being in front of the camera, so
you just jumped right into the deep end of the pool here.
I raw dogged that one too. Yeah.
Jesus.
But
haven't I taught you guys about 99 bananas yet?
I should have drank, but then I feel like I would have made even less words. But
yeah,
it'll tell you what about the fucking pool room.
What? So they interviewed you, right, about your fandom and all that. What did they ask you about? What did you tell
them? That's a great question. I don't know. I honestly, I was so nervous that I don't know what she asked me. I don't know what I said, but I do know that it was very heavily like Elliot, Bill Elliot, Chase Elliot, pool room, Dawsonville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you should have done is brought your own little siren, like the guy brought his own watermelon. Yeah.
Clearly, I dropped the ball big time. There was, I mean, I sat there while I was waiting and listened to like a few other people do it. There were some kids that did it. But yeah, after I was done, a guy walked in just caressing a watermelon that he had brought from home. So.
Brian's head just exploded. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Oh, I heard it. She told me when it happened, but she told us it's. Yeah. I don't know what kind of props. Again, I told Ashley she should have brought a Napa battery in with her and just say she walks around with it all the time.
On a leash. It's got its own little like Chase Elliott dog T-shirt on it.
This is my emotional support battery.
Yeah, also named Chase. But, you know, after seeing this segment, I can kind of understand why you didn't.
Make the cut.
You were in there for a split second. They showed a little shot of you laughing. You look good. It was nice. It was pleasant.
Scary. Yeah.
But it was
flattering shot. But.
Definitely not the type of fan image they were going for, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know what I really expected.
Too much denim,
to be,
you know?
But it, yeah. But it ended up not being anything like I thought I was signing up for after I watched it.
It was super short. It was like, what, 59 seconds, something like that, a minute?
Yeah, it was a minute. So now I understand why it was edited down so, so short. Like, they had a ton of people come in and film, and everyone literally said, like, you know, three words. So.
Well, yeah. you did get on the screen for about a third of a second.
Yeah.
Which I painstakingly screenshotted.
Yes, did a great job, Brian.
I'll leave that up to you, Ashley, whether you want to include that in the post or not. But
don't think I will. But thanks.
Well, you're now the most. Not credentialed because you don't have those either. You're definitely the most notable member of the show now, based on your television experience. Fox correspondent Ashley Trulup.
I mean, I was using an entire Darlington ad campaign last year, but yes, Ashley does.
Oh, wait. So, yeah, that's right. You were in mailers and.
Yeah. But Ashley definitely has more mainstream notoriety than I do, so it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, it was an experience.
That's cool. And afterwards, you did end up watching the Thursday night races, the duels and all that.
Oh, yeah. Jay let me crash on his couch, so.
Friend of the program, Jay Pennell.
Ended up going back to his house and got to watch the duels with him and catch up. So that was fun. Yeah. I asked him about the Chili Bowl, and he doesn't know where he was at either. So
that's good.
didn't learn much more there. So.
Yeah. He wasn't there. Well, so.
No.
While we're on the subject of Thursday, we might as well start talking somewhere about the racing. Thursday was the duels. You know, they went off without a hitch. I mean, you know, Wednesday, we were already recorded. Who the hell got the pole? McDowell got the pole with Logano.
Logano
got the pole. Who can tell the difference? Right.
Yeah, vice versa. Which, really, the only thing to note from that is the fact that Front Row is now a Tier 1 Ford team, and apparently, I thought I saw Stuart Haas Racing is no longer a Tier 1 Ford team, meaning that they get more support from Ford now, Front Row does, and not as much going to Stuart Haas anymore.
Well,
you know,
Stuart Haas is about to have their contract's almost up, so you can kind of guess that they're going to shift somewhere else. That would be my educated guess as a, you know, a lifelong fan. I bet you there's going to be a bow tie on those cars coming up. I don't have anything to back that up. Oh, Honda, perhaps. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Honda's a rumor. I mean, obviously Dodge was a rumor for a while, and that would make sense with Tony's drag racing career going the way it is. But they're not getting into it, so I guess that'll remains to be seen how that'll all play out. But regardless, Wednesday that happened. Thursday with the duels, and
yeah, Ryan Blaney taking the exact same shot into the fence that he did last year.
Yep. Yeah. He just had an absolute dog shit speed weekend. Poor guy. Another guy though that almost had a decent night and was really impressing a lot of people was our favorite BJ McLeod in the second duel. Not a charter team anymore. No sponsors. Didn't even put on a skull on the car, but he was running the top three for the first half of the duels. And, unfortunately, lost out in his run to make it to the 500, but
yeah, his logic behind having a completely blank black car was cool. Very old school, that just the idea that like people are going to see there's no fucking sponsors on this. Yeah. And if I make the show, then I'll get sponsors. And I guess he had some lined up if he did make the big show and just missed out. Hell of an effort.
Putting Creed should have slapped their stickers.
I'm saying, bro, it would have been perfect.
Yeah, they could have, for an extra $1,000, gotten a whole car as opposed to a bumper sticker on Jimmy Johnson's car.
He's got fucking human clay in the six disc changer in the back of of his car. You fucking know it. Perfect.
But it was awesome to see him get TV time and talked about, and they interviewed him, and just that alone was really cool to see. And you know, again, fortunately, he didn't make the race. He ended up not having the worst Monday night, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But his Thursday was.
Oh, I was just gonna say, BJ, also getting big shout outs from everyone in the booth, particularly Kevin Harvick, who's fresh off of a full time Winston Cup career. You know, he's been through all the sponsors pretty much. And for him to
think Harvick's always been a big fan of BJ's.
Everybody's a big fan of BJ. It's great.
They've had like Harvick has, you know, driven one of BJ's cars, you know, quote unquote one of his cars, but
that's right. Yeah.
There was some association there in the past. And again, BJ is one of those guys that I don't think I've ever heard anybody in NASCAR say a bad thing about. So kind of speaks to his character, so.
Agreed.
But I mean, overall, I mean, there was the one wreck in the duels. Other than that, it was two clean races.
Pretty decent racing at that too. It made me very excited for whenever the 500 was going to roll around, and the weather report was already looking pretty ugly. So I think some of us were planning for Tuesday racing.
Yeah,
at that point.
You know, Thursday it was all about the guys racing into the actual show itself, and it was entertaining. Both Jimmy Johnson, BJ, different stories, but very fun.
JJ Yaley racing in Greg Biffle's fire suit.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There we go. Yeah, the New York racing saga, that's how that concluded. Definitely tried wrecking Jimmy Johnson, too, to keep that spot. So.
That was definitely the race in Duel 1.
Yeah. But then moving on to Friday, you know, everybody saw the weather report all weekend. So NASCAR, you know, following what they had to do in L.A. a couple weeks prior, made what I believe is a smart call, and I feel like most people could feel the same way. They pushed the ARCA race to Friday night after the truck race, which would save a lot of money to those, you know, lower budget teams that couldn't stick around for a few days and wait it out like everybody else.
They're folding their cars in half anyway, so, you know, might as well get it over with.
Exactly.
The fans don't care about ARCA. They don't care what day you run it.
Yeah. I'll say this. I don't think I've ever seen that many people talking about a fucking ARCA race at 1 in the morning. We're out here talking shit about not watching Formula 1 and whatever else. Like, fuck, 1 a.m. You know, and all of us trying to stay up to watch this shit show.
And none of us did. None of us did.
I didn't make it. Yeah, I woke up to Gus Dean on top of the car.
I stayed up, but I definitely dozed off a couple times and was annoyed.
For as good of a decision as it was for NASCAR to get all the racing done Friday, that racing was absolute fucking hell.
It was awful. Just
coming off the heels of
terrible, bro.
One of the most embarrassing truck series finales of all time. They started off the season with one of the worst truck series Daytona races of all time.
Didn't skip a beat.
Just 52 laps under caution, the slowest average speed of any race run there at Daytona. You know, Raja Kuru made a good run in his new Spire ride, but ended up wrecking half the field at the very end of the race.
Boy, all the goodwill that kid had built up just thrown out the window very quickly with
really
clearing himself off the nose of whoever the fuck that was.
In the post, Nick Sanchez won the race. In the post-race interview, you know, Raja really did not do a great job of showing any humility and you know, realizing what he had done until Bubba Wallace came over and yes. had a very clear talking to making the mistakes that he did. And the next day, you know, Bubba explained what happened, and you know, same shit happened to him when he was young. Young made a bunch of mistakes. Kevin Harvick pulled him aside, told him to stop wrecking shit. Yep. He started to learn some respect. And you know, Raja and Bubba have a relationship. They, you know, Raja sees Bubba as a mentor.
Yep.
This is a totally normal thing. It was just caught on camera.
Yeah, Wallace said that on Twitter or X. He said as much, that this yeah. happens behind closed doors all the time. Yeah. This one just happened to make it on television, and I loved it. So.
Yeah. I thought it was great, but you have to imagine what the internet thought of that. People thought Bubba was going to attack Raja, and I know there was one guy that was flipping out, like, you don't ever put your hands on another man like that. And all he did was, like, pull his arm over to the side to talk to him.
Have like, you seen, like, the promo camera. Footage for all yeah. of NASCAR's fighting?
Yeah. I've seen Ross Chastain punch Noah Gregson, like, 27,000 times, I feel like.
Yes.
In yeah. promos.
Correct.
So.
Yeah, but definitely cool to see that on display. Because, again, we don't get an opportunity to see a mentor chewing somebody out all that often.
I think he's definitely trying to spare Raja from some of those shit that he's, the path shit that he's dealt with.
Yeah, and it just doesn't, so. To go out there and act like you had a clean third place or second place, whatever you ended up getting, you know, it's like, well, you just got a call from Mr. Hendrick. How's it going? You know, like he just fucking really went out there and did a great job, which he did. He almost won that race, but he just either his spotter didn't give him the right info. He cleared himself. Some people are saying he drifted up. Whatever happened, it cleaned out, you know, about $2 million worth of trucks. And yeah, it sucks to see that. So a little humility in an interview goes a long way.
Not that there hadn't been any.
Oh, no, it wasn't the first wreck of the night. Yeah. To be clear. This was just the icing on the cake for a really embarrassing night of truck racing.
Yeah. Wasn't it like a record number of cautions?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was like 12.
Yeah, it's like I said, 52 laps out of 100 under caution. So
there was also dogs barking in the background of the booth broadcast.
I didn't catch that.
So I don't know who brought little Fido to the Charlotte studio with him, but yeah. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, what a mess, though. It doesn't make me want to watch trucks at all this year.
Yeah.
Definitely those cars. As we were watching it, the cars are really loose. Like, everybody was really frantic. And as we were watching it, I was like, is this a skill thing? Are these trucks just, like, way more, like, unwieldy? I don't know. But then the Xfinity cars are pretty similar, and those guys managed to keep it pretty straight. So I think it is a talent issue.
Oh, yeah, very clearly. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like so many different drivers have said. A lot of these kids come in with money, and you know, they haven't necessarily earned their way there. They don't have as much respect for the equipment, their teams, the other drivers, and they drive like assholes. And you know, it's been proven. It happens every year, and it just seems like the trucks haven't cycled out a lot of that behavior the last handful of years. And it's a real shame, because the truck series has had so many great moments over the years. I mean, for a while in the 2000s, it was a place where legends went and won championships, and now it's just a shit show and
less
embarrassing.
Less veterans.
Yeah, well, it's turned into ARCA, like mid-2000s ARCA or late 2000s. Actually, well, ARCA used to be a great series too back in the day. And
yeah.
But now they and the truck series are competing for worst racing on the planet, which we'll get to in a second, because that race took a long time too.
Yep.
Fuck.
One thing that we'll mention a handful of times throughout this discussion is, you know, there are a bunch of different drivers doing double duty, whether it be, you know, both races Friday, one race Friday, one race Monday, both races Monday. A lot of people were running more than one race. Friday, you had Tony Bredinger running. Well, before we get to Tony, let's talk about Shane Van Gisbergen. He was set to run in the ARCA race, or was supposed to make it in the ARCA race, didn't qualify. Magically, a team pulled out, and SVG was in the race and shit the bed after five laps. He got caught in somebody else's wreck. Bummer, but, you know, he did a little bit better in Xfinity, which we'll get to.
The story behind it, for those of you who might not be aware, is that Van Gisbergen NASCAR has a really convoluted way of approving people to race at tracks like Daytona and Talladega. And instead of having like a rookie orientation program like they do at Indianapolis for anyone driving an IndyCar there for the first time, or even if you haven't driven in a while, they make you go through this program and prove that you can handle it. And, you know, Indy's a marquee event, right? It's one of the biggest races in the world, as is Daytona. Obviously, the Xfinity race is not, or most competition other than the 500 is not at that level as far as prestige is concerned. But, you know, why not have a program where you get these people up to speed and teach them the respect rather than just strapping them into an old Cup chassis and throwing them out there in the ARCA race to die, which is pretty much what they're asked to do. And, you know, Shane is a champion in the Supercar series. He won his first Cup race. That says something. So to make him do all that, it just seems kind of convoluted. And, of course, the ARCA race was his ticket into the Xfinity race, which qualifying got moved, and it was a whole thing of whether or not he was going to be able to make the show at all based on getting approved. And he missed the ARCA show. So, like you said, a car magically withdrew. And from what I hear, anywhere from $75,000 to $100,000 was exchanged to make this guy go home with a clean car. So he probably had a good time hanging out in Daytona over the weekend at the local Buffalo Wild Wings or whatever, just chilling and going home with a fresh paint job on his car. Yep.
But the other person that, again, actually made double duty on Friday was Tony Bredinger. And, again, didn't have an amazing truck race. She didn't do horrible, but she got caught up in somebody else's wreck.
Yeah, one of those deals. Top 10, top 15 all day, which is
she qualified okay. I mean, not bad. No big deal. But in the ARCA race, she ended up getting shit canned by apparently her teammate and
Justine.
did not hold anything back when being interviewed afterwards. I mean, granted, she'd already run one full race prior to this. She's already pretty fucking tired, and I understand why your filter's completely off at this point in the night. But
also, the wreck happened on like lap 5.
It was very early in the race.
It was a big wreck too. That's the wreck that took SVG out.
But yeah, she just let her teammate have it, and it was very entertaining.
She started it off with, "Well, I don't want to be mean," and then just proceeds to be incredibly mean.
Yes, yes.
Talking about daddy's money and all that, which is kind of rich, but but yeah, wow. Look that interview up, folks. It is fucking funny.
Yes.
Apparently, all three women in the ARCA race were caught up in that wreck too. So.
Yeah, that's right. All of them. I think one ended up finishing the race, maybe, but two of them were out completely.
Also, the Finch, that Finch kid who was running up front all night, he also had a very similar interview about Gus because he got taken out by him too at the very end of the race. So, yeah, but Gus Dean got the trophy. So.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I definitely fell asleep with like 20-ish to go. So
Same. That race started at like 11:20 at night, and it didn't end till 1:30 in the morning. So
which
just a huge amount of fuck it energy coming from the NASCAR fan base. I love it. It's great to see so many people. It's like, you know what? I'm going to stay up and get drunk and watch this ARCA race. I don't give a fuck. <What's> a, it's hey, great. They should hold it at like midnight all the time.
Yeah. I think you have to look at the whole weekend because like we knew we weren't going to get racing Saturday and most likely not Sunday. So it's like, well, we're going to have to wait 2 days. Might as well just get all this in while we can and then chill for 2 days. So.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, Saturday was a washout. NASCAR did their best to get the Xfinity race in. They got qualifying in, but probably 20, 30 minutes prior to the green drop, and it started raining again. So Sunday, I mean, I think it rained the entire fucking day on Sunday. Yeah. So everything got pushed to Monday, which is kind of to be expected. And this is where our exhaustion really comes into play, at least for me, I'll say that.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to go in the conversation next.
Yeah, I woke up bright and early thinking I was going to get to watch Xfinity first thing in the morning. It was going to be a great day of racing. And then I ended up having to sit around for 6 hours after they moved Xfinity, just waiting for the 500. So. Yeah.
See, I was excited about that because so I got laid off last November and I just now finally started at a new job. And guess what? First day happens to be fucking Monday the 19th or whatever it was. And it's supposed to go till like I didn't get out of there till like 7 o'clock. I was supposed to be done by like 5:30. So I missed fucking everything. But when they pushed Xfinity to the end of the night, I was like, great. Daytona, like, I'm just praying for a little bit more rain, you know, just to push the 500 back to like six. I can watch all that, stay up, do, you know, do ARCA Night in America all over again on a Monday night. But that didn't happen. I watched like five laps of the 500, and then, yeah, it was, I was pretty pissed off. You guys got to see me try and bury myself last night in alcohol, trying to catch up. But, yeah, definitely tired. I also partied on Sunday as if the Daytona 500 still happened. I had people coming over to the house, and they're not really racing fans. They're just coming to hang out in the bar with me, and so... They're like, what time are we showing up? And I was like, yeah, fuck it, 3 o'clock. Let's go. Who cares? So, yes, very tired today. But and then, of course, the jet dryer is wrecked. We got to talk about that for a second here.
Before we get into the 500 talk, I want to drop back real quick and mention this little tidbit. We talked about how there were 3 women in the race, the ARCA race on Friday. And, you know, as always... there are plenty of men and, again, fans and primarily men that have negative things to say about, you know, women racing. You know, we talked last week about how, you know, Haley Deegan and Tony having the most social media followers and the outroar that created, or outcry, rather. Kenny Wallace had some stuff to say about this situation. He, you know, as a fairly reasonable human being, is on the side of women racing, doesn't care if they're pretty or not, doesn't give a shit, just wants to see them race, you know, which is a good attitude to have.
It's the right attitude, yep.
And one of our, I guess now, favorite Twitter accounts, we mentioned him last week, What's Understeer. Kenny tweeted about, you know, his YouTube show and talking about men that do not like pretty girls in racing, which led to this reply from What's Understeer. And won't mention anything about how they are a detriment to competitors' budgets, competitors' results, success of NASCAR, legitimacy of the race car, etc. This is him speaking about women racing.
Well, Kenny, I don't know if it was women in general or particularly Tony, but either way, what a not the greatest way to frame that.
Like a woman hater in general.
Yeah, just a complete conspiracy theorist. Fucking fruitcake nut
this
job.
This is the guy last week that was he had like a several page outline of how last year's cup season and Blaney winning the championship was totally rigged.
Yeah, so, by Netflix.
Yeah.
Go outside.
So,
touch some grass.
Yes.
Upon seeing this, Kenny Wallace absolutely gave him so far the Twitter ethering of the decade in my eyes. With this response, he quote tweeted the Understeer's response, would you shut the fuck up for a little bit? You are making yourself look like a male chauvinist.
Correct.
Do you even like ladies? Show me a picture of your face. That's it. Done. Guy should just end his life right there. It's over. I couldn't stop laughing at that. Like, you know.
Each line has its own level of just, there's so much to unpack out of that.
Man. Yeah.
Well, did we ever see his face? Did he respond?
No, we did not see his face. You know, look, Kenny has had occasionally a checkered past with the way he interacts with people and some of the stuff he says on Twitter, but I think we've all been coming around to him the last year or so with him just being generally more of a decent person and just posting entertaining content. And when he does this type of shit, it's like, how can you not love the guy?
Yeah.
Like, he is just a treasure.
He's always kind of shown that. I mean, there's an interview with him from way back about talking about, it was back in his like Bush days or something. And he said something about like toothless rednecks or something up on stage in an interview. And he looked down, there was a lady up front who had like kind of a fucked up grill, and she like kind of got embarrassed and started covering her mouth. And he realized like, oh no, that's not what I meant by that, you know. And so he always talks about being very careful with your, which is hilarious coming from Kenny.
But well, it's also hilarious coming from or when you think about who is his brother is, and technically brothers. I don't, some rusty stuff is alleged, but Mike clearly has said and done some very shitty things to people of other genders and races. So to see Kenny kind of go in the opposite direction is very nice to see.
Kenny's got a good heart, and you can tell.
Yeah.
And he tries, you know, and he openly tries, too, which I appreciate.
For sure.
And he'll also question your manhood and ask to see your face. So.
Let me see the picture of your face. That's the episode title. I was gonna call it the other night, but that's the episode title.
Show me a picture of your face.
All right, good, so now that we've broken up the racing talk with that, I guess we'll. We'll dive back in to Monday's festivities. You know,
I was hoping there'd be a little bit more like funny shit that happened over the weekend, since there's a full like day and a half with nothing happening on track, or 2 days rather.
Yep.
And it was kind of dead. The only real highlight that I saw was Tara Allmendinger, which is AJ's wife. Talking about you know, situational awareness. She went on X and said, as much as I love the flyovers here at Daytona, it would be nice to know when they might fly by. Consistent practice schedule or a warning would be appreciated. AJ and I had our son outside today and scrambled over to cover his ears. It's so painful. This post is a request that has nothing to do with freedom. So kind of setting herself up for what would undoubtedly come. The scheduling thing I can kind of understand, but you are taking your child to a racetrack. So,
I mean, she does have protective ear covers for the kid, but she can't leave him on 24/7
because
he has something wrong with him where he has to wear a helmet.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Fix his skull. So.
I feel like an asshole.
Yeah, me and Rob being dicks again because I pointed this out.
I'll have to show Kitty a picture of my face after that one. Never mind. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Someone did end up finding a schedule for her and sending it to her, so she knew when to keep his ears covered, and then it was fine. Yeah.
Well, all right.
Sorry to rain on that parade.
No, again, this is I'm taking a lesson from Kenny. I apologize. I was an asshole. Sorry, I brought it up.
Well, anyways, moving on from that mistake.
We're all growing here, folks.
We are.
Yep. The last time that the 500 was postponed was 2012, and. In addition to being pushed back to Monday, there was an incident in that race where Juan Pablo Montoya ran into a jet dryer and it blew up. Very infamous incident. I'm sure if you're listening to the show, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
However, in 2024, the next time the 500 was pushed back to a Monday, there was another jet dryer incident. This time, thankfully, not nearly as damaging to the track. Apparently, one jet dryer slid down the track and collided into another jet dryer, like just lost traction or whatever. Thankfully, there was no explosion. There was a little bit of fuel spilled, but they were able to get everything cleaned up and, you know, racing went as scheduled. But it was a bad omen, I think. You know, for what was to come throughout the rest of the night. And, you know, again, the race started at 4:30. I don't know.
Before we dive into the race, I just want to give a shout out to Andy Newsom, who was down there all weekend, just spending days in rain delay. And so shout out to all of our friends that were down there.
Yeah, Alex, my buddy, we went to the Chili Bowl.
Alex showed up at the last minute.
Yeah,
yep.
He was there.
Josh was there.
Yeah. Whole squad of crazy motherfuckers. Great dudes to hang with. And Andy, of course, being the king of them all. There's none sweeter than that guy. And he's the kind of guy you want to be reined in with. You know what I mean?
That's true. But that's a lot of time spent camping in the rain.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So before we started recording, I think we were all kind of feeling the same thing where it's like, I'm not excited to talk about this race. Not necessarily because of who won or where other drivers that I wanted to see win finished, but kind of just wasn't a good race for so many different reasons. I mean, the weather was not the issue. You couldn't do anything about the weather, so no ill will towards that. But, you know, it started off with an early wreck, like one of the earliest wrecks in the race in a while, with Brad Keselowski pulling a Brad move and getting John Hunter Nemechek into William Byron, which started a nice little small chain reaction wreck, which didn't take too many guys out, but was just not a great way to start things off.
Yeah, Ryan Preece went for a tumble. So I'm glad I didn't see that, because I would have immediately melted down. That's way too early for that.
Yeah. Jimmy Johnson was caught up in that, too.
Yeah, that was a hard lick. Yeah, Austin Dillon, which we're fine with that, but, you know.
Yeah.
He makes a comeback later.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
But from there, the race just became this boring parade, which, again, isn't necessarily something that is surprising.
It's not exclusive to this Daytona 500, that's for sure.
No, but it became this weird fuel mileage game that I think became very apparent at one point in the race when AJ Allmendinger all by himself ran a lap that was 6 miles an hour faster than the pack.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to Denny's show. It came out just before we were started recording, and he was talking about it. And basically, the guys are running at like half throttle trying to save gas, and this was for most of the race.
The pack speed was in the 170s, which is absurd. It's absurdly slow.
People both didn't want to pass and couldn't pass because of the way everyone was driving so slow. And I just don't quite understand, like, racing that way that early in the race. Like, I get it, you don't want to, you know, cause a bunch of wrecks and whatnot.
It's all about fuel mileage, and they talked about this in the Duel broadcast because they were doing it during the duels as well, just to a lesser extent because it was less mileage to cover. But basically, mm-hmm. they want to save as much fuel as possible so they can go really hard at the end if they need to, and also shorten their pit stop should something happen where a bunch of cars get taken out and they have to re-cook their fuel strategy. So, you know, saving a quarter, half second on pit road trying to get fuel and then not having to worry so much about topping it off, that's huge, especially in this pack race. If you can get out, you know, a quarter of a second in front of somebody else, that now puts you in a much better position in the draft and closer to the front, obviously. So that's what it's all about. But it just, the way it plays out is so whack.
Yeah.
Seriously, a bunch of cup cars going around at 170 miles an hour on a 2.5 mile super speedway is just, yeah. And, you know, I got to say shout out to the MRN crew. I did get to catch the end of the race. I only got to watch 5 laps on TV, but on my drive home, I did turn on MRN, and they made it sound like it was the greatest thing you'd ever see. They always do. Yeah, they're so fucking talented. Also, shout out to them bringing Doug Rice up into the booth. He's a PRM broadcaster, and as a result, never got a chance to call the 500. So they opened the door to him, let him come up there and do a few laps. So that was cool to hear, and there's some videos of that on social media. But, yeah, the radio broadcast made it sound like this is the greatest race you've ever seen. And then after rewatching it this afternoon, it definitely wasn't. But no. Shout out to them for doing their usual hype up routine.
I can't remember exactly where in the race the big one was. It was under 15 laps to go, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Eight to go. Okay, it took out massive chunk of all the contenders. A couple guys were still in it, you know, Bubba, Byron, Bowman, etc. But I mean, it was to be expected that type of wreck to happen. I mean, it's Daytona, it's a play track. Yeah. You're gonna see that. The unfortunate part was the actual finish itself. Now, throughout the last handful of years, it seems like the final lap ends at a shorter and shorter distance. I mean, you remember, you know, Cindric won at the finish line, which was great. But then you had McDowell. I think that got called in turn three. Last year it got called in turn one. This year it got called about 5 feet from the start finish line. Just really, I mean, NASCAR is very hit and miss with how they make some of their calls. But in my eyes, coming to that finish line, cars were spinning before anybody crossed the finish line. You would think that would have been an instant yellow flag setting up to a green, white checkered, but no, they just said, nope, Byron got it. It's over. Which was just a complete wet fart of a finish. Like, nobody was happy with that. Even Byron fans were not happy with it. I spoke to a couple of them, after the race, and nobody was happy with
it. When he climbed out of the car, people were booing because of how lame the finish was.
Yeah.
And again, I feel like people had some things to say about Byron. He kind of caused that wreck. I personally don't see it that way, but
it was just
disappointing to see the race finish that way. Like, they should have had a green white checkered. And it's rare that I'll say, like, I want to see a green white checkered, but there very clearly should have been one there. And it was, to me, almost as embarrassing as that call they made a couple years ago with Blaney at the All-Star race where,
yeah,
you know, they called a yellow when he was at the line and had to re-rack everybody. This was the same type of deal, but exact opposite effect.
Yeah, I mean, I you gotta imagine that maybe that finish is why they chose to just miss the button until they got right to the line. Yeah, it was a pretty, and like NASCAR's logic was that they're gonna stay in the grass, right? And if they stay in the grass, then it's clean, it's safe, everyone gets by. But I don't know. And I guess it's consistent with the way that NASCAR has been doing it, but yeah, what a shitty way to, you know, end the whole thing. And I'm sure there was also a premonition up in the tower and back in Charlotte that if they re-racked them and started again, that they'd be there till fucking Tuesday. So,
well, I mean, if they're very clear, it would have been a couple other wrecks, but yeah.
It just seemed like we're getting this over with. Byron's the winner. There's not going to be any protest from Hendrick because Alex Bowman got second. So if it was a Gibbs car or a Roush car or anybody else in that second position, I feel like you'd be hearing a lot more about this in the media. But since, I mean, Rick's not going to protest his own win. So no.
Finishing 1-2 on the exact day of the 40 years since their first Daytona 500 start.
Yeah, take it.
Motorsports, yeah.
So I'm going to bring in a little bit of a conspiracy theory here with this, and it's a very minor one. But
fuck yeah.
So we didn't talk about this yet, and it's not something I necessarily want to dive into on this episode because, A, I don't think any of us are all that educated on the subject, and, B, it's confusing.
Well, I don't mean anything. We talk about stuff we're not educated on all the time.
Well, again, this is a very deep topic that we're not getting into, but before the weekend started, it was announced that the negotiating between the NASCAR teams and NASCAR themselves over the TV rights deal and the money and charter system, NASCAR, or the teams themselves, withdrew from negotiations. I don't know. I'm going to get all this.
Sick fucking tie-in, by the way. I love where this is going.
I'm gonna fucking get all this wrong, but let's just say right now, NASCAR teams and NASCAR themselves, they're at a standstill, and it's not good. It's not, you know, IndyCar IRL split level, but who the fuck knows? I don't think it'll get that way, but we'll talk about that as that story develops. But my conspiracy theory is, after all these teams, like, you knew you were going to have another big wreck, and when you have someone at the level of ownership as Rick Hendrick with two cars, again, on their 40th anniversary, NASCAR is going to want that guy to be happy in the midst of all these negotiations, and keeping Papa H happy with something like this probably isn't going to hurt anything.
If Papa from H the way ain't Jeff happy, Gordon, nobody's happy.
From the way Jeff Gordon kind of talked about it on the Dale Jr. show last week, you know, it seems like Hendrick is in this just like everybody else is, as far as they want money and they don't make a profit and all this other shit. But anyways, we'll dive into this story as it develops, because I think there's a lot more to come with it. But that's my conspiracy.
I haven't been keeping up with that yet. So
yeah, for sure, this is going to be a big story coming up. The Teams Association has hired a pretty reputable antitrust lawyer. He's just on the team. He's not really doing anything or pursuing any action right now. But the move that they've made to bring in this caliber of legal team is certainly it's a little bit of saber rattling. So
for reference, folks, the team's got the lawyer that got Division One players paid. So if that doesn't tell you they're here to they're not fucking around with this. So yeah.
So of course,
we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, this all comes from TV money. The new deal got announced with all the networks and everything. Apparently, from what I gather, the amount that they received was actually less than they were hoping for, which is why NASCAR is not offering any concessions, you know, to the teams, because they have a deal they presented. Here's the deal. We're not changing it. We're not budging. And apparently, it's not good enough. And again, like, Jeff Gordon was on the Dale Jr. download, and he literally just said that Hendrick Motorsports has not made money in 10 years. Fucking think about that. That's the top team in motorsports, essentially, or one of them. Like, when you think about international motorsports, they went to Le Mans, did well. They had an IndyCar program through McLaren now for Larson. They do all sorts of shit. If it wasn't for Rick Hendrick's businesses, then we wouldn't have a Hendrick Motorsports the way we know it. And the fact that the top team with the most famous talent, essentially, you know, not counting 2311 or anything like that, can't turn a profit, that's a problem. And so I understand why these teams are lawyering up in the way that they are. And it's going to, I don't know what it's going to look like. Again, none of us do. None of us are educated enough about it to really know. But I would expect this to become something we end up talking about a lot more in the future. Without question. Because they should have had a deal 2 years ago, from what I gather. So.
Yeah, no, it should have all been cleared up by now. And
I'm the Scully to your Mulder here.
There you go. So, I don't know. I got nothing else to say about the 500. If you guys have any closing thoughts, we'll wrap up with the real race of the evening after this.
I just want to say that I thought Harvick did great in the booth.
Yes.
I'm really excited for him long term.
And Clint did too.
And I feel like Clint has something, that dynamic with him and Harvick is going to help him a lot.
Yeah.
Let me just say one really quick thing about Clint. I saw a clip of all the kids talking about their dads, and Jesus fucking Christ, Clint's kid is like a carbon copy of Clint.
Cash
it's scary.
Boy,
yeah. I look forward to that segment. They do it every year, and I look forward to it every year because his son is just definitely a little mini Clint.
Yeah.
Spot on.
So good.
Yeah. And also, shout out to your favorite driver, Rob. He did pretty good.
David Reagan?
Yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Running second for a while.
Yeah, and he's always been good at plate races. I always put a little money on him just in case because he's severely underrated. He's won at plate tracks before, and it's he's like a McDowell kind of guy, and especially he had a McDowell kind of car because Roush is pretty fucking fast these days, especially at the plate tracks. So, yeah, it was nice to see that. Hope to see more out of him in that, whatever they call it, 60-plus fucking program they have. That's not it. What is it?
I think it's Project 60.
Project 60.
Project 16 over.
Who the fuck knows? Whatever it is. It'd be cool to see David come back again. I'm sure he'll be back at the 500 next year, too. Also, shout out to Justin Haley. He did a good job as well.
Yeah,
he did.
He was another one that
they
was
They did him
impressive.
Wrong. Fox, of course, like keeping those fucking cartoon graphics for all the drivers. And I don't even know how to describe it. Like, he's got it. He's super svelte. He's got his little hands on his hips. He's got some of that, like, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race kind of, you know, sass going. But he's got a double chin. They just did him so dirty. So fix that, please. a couple more coverage complaints, which NASCAR fans love to complain about Fox. They did a Crank It Up segment during a pit cycle, which was fucking insane. I'm guessing the pit reporters had to go take a shit or something all at the same time. Maybe they got sick. Maybe they were drinking with Andy Newsom and just couldn't do it. I don't know.
There's a lot of sounds on pit road.
Yeah.
Crank those up.
Kind of a neat idea, but yeah, to do a Crank It Up segment at the place where Crank It Up was born, and it's the best.
You know, when the cars aren't running full speed, they're saving fuel. Can't
exactly.
Really
running around in second gear, yeah.
It can't be... We can't move on from the 500 without, unfortunately, giving two compliments to Corey LaJoy. Once again, finishing in the top five in the 500, which, hey, listen, again, you can't argue with he did well. He was up there at the end.
He can't
shit on him.
He wrecked the whole field.
He always does, but one day he'll figure it out.
he did the same thing at the end of Talladega, too, so...
But the compliment that is actually truly earned is the Chili's commercial. Now, if you didn't see it, he starred in a very good Chili's commercial that was incredibly derivative of the It's Always Sunny episode where Charlie's in the mailroom and he's like a psychopath conspiracy theory guy. And they basically set that up with the Chili's car. And the conclusion of the commercial is Corey filling the car with margaritas because the Chili's car should run on margaritas. So... I loved it. It was very good. For as much as I'm not a fan of him, the commercial was inarguably good.
You also don't get to see like any NASCAR driver really get that animated. This is like definitely a Corey LaJoy we haven't seen, kind of enthusiastic and into the role. It reminded me a lot of the commercials you see back in the 90s and like the Napa commercial of Mikey showing up at the wrong racetrack and all that.
Yeah.
It felt like it belonged, but it's standalone and it can be anywhere and actually, you know, get people to maybe tune into a NASCAR race or at least know who Corey LaJoy is or whatever. So a big win across the board for that marketing team.
Chili's, yeah.
But Chili's, fuck them. We don't go there.
There have been a couple good NASCAR commercials the last few years that I thought were funny. Like, I really like the Mahindra commercials.
The Briscoe one? Yeah, that was good.
Chase and Tony,
yeah,
those are great.
I do like those, yeah.
And I really loved, and at this point I'm forgetting what it was even for, but there was a Bush Brothers commercial where Kurt gets beamed up into an alien ship and is, like, psyched on. He's, like, waiting for him, kind of like Scott Blomquist. So whatever the hell that was for, that's... To this day, my favorite NASCAR commercial, but this new one's pretty good.
My favorite one was the Rusty Wallace Miller Genuine Draft one. I think it was Miller Genuine Draft, where he's running around the racetrack at midnight, and the track is just ripping up behind him.
Yep, I know exactly the one.
That shit rules. Which, by the way, I'd like to pose this question to all the fans out there. What's your favorite NASCAR commercial from back in the day or now, or is there anything that you remember from watching that you loved that we might not be mentioning on the show?
Yeah, by all means, hit us up. Give us some feedback. Let's see. Anything else before the Xfinity race? Friend of the show, Pippa, this girl from Connecticut. She actually chimed in a little bit on the conversation. She quote tweeted a quote from the Dawsonville pool room. All the new fans from the Netflix series are probably confused, because I sure am. Why is no one showing us when the caution came out and which time loop was used to determine the winner? Yep. All fair questions.
Yep.
And yeah, she pointed out, you know it's bad when even the pool room is confused. So
yeah, what kind of noise do they make down there? Is there a different siren for like bad
for confusion?
Calls?
Yeah, I don't know.
When that happened, I was, not to harp on the finish anymore, but it was kind of reminiscent of the 2003 Indy 500 when Paul Tracy got robbed and it went to court and all that. And I was like, holy fuck, this is really bad. But again, it's Rick Hendrick finishing second. He's not going to say anything. And they made their stance very clear, and it's not getting reversed. There's no chance of that. And I don't mind seeing William Byron win. You know, he was up in the mix all day, and I just hate that he won it that way. And like you said, Brian, I think everybody is a little bummed out that he got his 500 win that way, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the 500. It'll be the last we have to talk about this for a while. So
until next week in Atlanta when we do it again.
Yeah. But anyways, on to the real main event of the night was the Xfinity race. Again, pushed to after the 500. And, you know, the winner
was
not...
exhausted by then.
Yeah. Nobody was shocked by Austin Hill winning. It was his third Daytona win in a row. You know, he had a few issues throughout the race, but managed to be where he needed to be at the very end, avoided all the wrecks, and did Austin Hill shit. So not a shock to see him win. Unfortunately, Frankie Muniz didn't do very well. He was caught up in an early wreck.
Yep.
I did read just before we started recording, this news isn't official yet, but apparently he bought into Joey Gase Motorsports.
Oh.
So I don't know what that means. I have to assume more time in the car, especially since he had Ford backing him for this race. But I'm sure we'll get more info about that within the coming days.
Still shocking to me how much of a non-story he is.
And it really is, because, yeah, there aren't... I can't think of the last time a celebrity managed to get themselves into a top-tier sport like he has. I mean, granted, yeah, he's... You know, he was a child star, but he... Still a pretty big child star, and he's young and
well, he made
talented.
All of his money, apparently. Well, he took all of his money from Malcolm in the Middle and the shit he did as a child actor, and he bought a bunch of parking lots in Los Angeles and got rich off that. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, that's not a surprise. I mean,
and he dumped all that money back into motorsports, and he's been doing it for a really long time, and just the fact that he's managed to make it to the second highest level of stock car racing in the U.S. is, you know... So when he bought his way in, he's not all that bad, and I can't believe he's not more of a story. It's crazy to me.
You know, when you see stuff like, you know, Jordan and Pitbull and other celebrities getting involved in the ownership side of things, like, you know, yeah, it's cool, but it's also clearly a business investment for them in a lot of ways, and it's good for the sport, but it's not that great of a story. Whereas something like this, where you get, again, an accomplished child star that just wants to fucking race and is actually putting the effort into it, it should be much bigger of a story. It doesn't make sense.
And if that's true and he's actually buying into a team, that's him putting his money where his mouth is in a greater way. So he's invested, and it's cool. I hate to see him get caught up, get knocked out of the race. It was pretty early on, probably about halfway.
Yeah, it
I
was
think.
Very early, yeah. I'm trying to think what else really was what we need to talk about from the race. I mean, Sheldon Creed finished second again.
Just Andy Petrie in the booth having just with the possibility of Sheldon Creed having to win that race and talk about it. Which, by the way, I think
not enjoy him.
I think Andy Petrie's great in the booth. I really do, but he's so embedded
RCR
with RCR
wasn't racing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's too bad because I think he's really talented and he's really insightful, but he's also kind of
he's been in the booth for a very long time.
That's true.
Like, since the 90s. So you would think he'd be able to kind of separate his allegiances, but apparently not.
No.
I'm trying to think. Van Gisbergen, he qualified well for the race. He ran up front for most of it. I can't remember if he got caught up in that last lap wreck or not, but he ended up finishing 12th, which...
He was in, like, every wreck that happened almost. He got fucked up pretty bad. But he stuck with it and apparently had a good time, so that's good news because there's a lot of that kind of racing here in NASCAR, so hopefully he's not regretting his decision to come over here.
One thing I wanted to say about that is he had, after the race, made, like, his Instagram post. And I was scrolling through the comments, and the comments were wonderful. There was so much positivity in those comments from, like, his OG fans saying, like, they've never watched NASCAR or they haven't watched in forever and that they loved it and that they're going to be watching from now on. So I thought that was great. So.
Yeah, there's definitely a small, like, section of fans that when they got annoyed with the new direction of NASCAR, myself included, started digging into V8 supercars a little bit because it's pretty, it's all road courses and street circuits and shit, but it's pretty similar racing and it's really exciting, especially Bathurst, the Bathurst 1000. If you ever, speaking of being really tired after watching a race, that's one. But if you have a chance to watch that, it's incredible racing. It's incredible. And by the way, there's a great video of Darrell Waltrip taking a ride along on the mountain, which is worth looking up. Maybe we'll do that as a video of the week one of these days because it's just peak Darrell Waltrip, hillbilly, you know, scared shitless and as a passenger in a race car. It's fucking funny. But, yeah, I'm all for it. I'm excited to see Shane. Finally, when he makes it to Cup full time, which is definitely the plan, that's going to be fucking awesome. But I thought the Xfinity race was great. Like, this is the kind of super speedway racing that I love. The cars, they're not on rails. They're going for it the whole time. Similar strategies, you know. But it's just, they race relatively clean. And, of course, as it does with plate racing, it always comes unglued at the end. But what a show the entire night. And the fact that Natalie Decker led for a little while based off strategy was entertaining as fuck. So I don't really know, like, what else you want. And especially to put that right after the 500. Also, one more point against Fox. I know I'm shitting on them today, but I know they had to do it, but they went straight into, like, what was on Fox after the race? It was, like, local news or some shit like that.
Are you talking about the 500?
The 500 cut off, like, immediately almost. And there was no post-race coverage anywhere that I knew of unless it was on Fox Sports. And you flipped over to FS1, and there's a poker tournament on.
Poker, yeah.
Which, I mean, what an opportunity to show people the true future of NASCAR, which is the Xfinity Series. That's where everybody who's coming up is racing. They have their own stars, and the racing is incredible. So the fact that they kind of fumbled that a little bit, and I know they had to do what they had to do because of scheduling. They didn't plan it that way. They did what they could to make everybody happy. But what a bummer to not even give people a chance to really know that that race was about to happen. And the fact that it was pretty good... makes it all the more painful for me, but
yeah. Couple things I was going to say. Going back to BJ, he was in this race. He had a very poor starting spot, and let me tell you. So I had his radio on both Thursday and the duels, and throughout the race last night. And his spotter in the Cup car was this, just gentle, soft-spoken, like, wise old guy that was, like, just encouraging BJ the whole time and just, like, was just so soothing to listen to. And that vibe was the exact opposite in the Xfinity car. BJ was bitching the entire time. His car didn't run. He wasn't happy. You know, he was in full fuck-it mode. He ended up finishing 15th with a clean car, which was good. But, just completely different vibes from him, those two races. And going back to Van Gisbergen, I think it was after the ARCA race or his ARCA wreck, was interviewed and just was like super polite and very upbeat for just getting wrecked out of his first ARCA race. And even his sign off, he's just like, okay, see ya. Like just saying goodbye to the reporter after wrecking out of this race was just very, very refreshing.
Happy to be there.
Yeah, he's a cool personality, and I'm excited to see what he can do. So just, you know, those are the good things, and it's over with. We survived Daytona. All of our friends survived Daytona. So racing happened, and now we're in the ship. And
two doubleheaders in one weekend.
Yep.
And now we have another doubleheader coming up this Saturday.
That's right.
Which, as of right now, thankfully, it's looking like the weather is going to be good in Atlanta all weekend. Hopefully, I didn't just jinx it, but it doesn't. Yeah.
Well, it's also our. You're going to the race, right, Drew Love?
I'm going on Sunday. I'm not going to the doubleheader, but I'm going to be there Sunday.
The 15 hours of truck racing that'll undoubtedly happen.
Yeah, I'm good there. Yeah,
I was on the fence about going. Again, I think I'm a little exhausted. My dad kind of dropped the ball on the trip, and now Friday I am going. I'm not going to say where, but there is an estate sale from someone that used to work at a car company that there's a lot of racing stuff that I have to go buy. So that will be my weekend.
That's fucking cool.
Is it near you? Yeah. Is it like Ohio?
It's within a few hours of me. Let's just say that.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, what do we want to talk about next? Is there anything short track wise to talk about? I mean, fuck, we talked so much about that the last couple weeks.
There's so much. Again, like, because alongside Speed Weekend in Daytona, Speed Weeks in Florida has been going on for a long time, and that wrapped up Friday and Saturday night. Of course, they got screwed by weather as well, so there's a lot of schedule changes. I don't want to waste a lot of time on this, or not waste, because I love this shit, but I know you guys aren't. Yeah. As obsessed as I am, and most of the listeners probably aren't either. But I do want to shout out Nick Hoffman getting a win down in Volusia in the World of Outlaws late models. That was cool to see. Bobby Pierce, of course, getting the Big Gator trophy championship deal down there. Of course, no surprises there. Speaking of no surprises, Matt Hirschman also winning the Richie Evans Memorial down at New Smyrna. Also picked up the Modified Championship there. That's two of 1,000 events that went down. Again, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I'm so fucking fried. And I'm glad that we're kind of moving into a little bit more of a gentle role with the schedule and all that. There is racing this week. Of course, Heilemann and Lucas Oil late models are going to be going to Golden Isles Thursday through Saturday. So that'll be a cool show to watch at night. Again, high limit racing is always good. 410s are always fun, and the Lucas Oil Series is as good as it gets for late models. But that's pretty much it for the septic tank this week. I'll keep it nice and short since we're all fucking dying here.
there were a couple. Oh, go ahead, Ashley.
I was just going to say, I did watch a little bit of that ASA race last Thursday that Bubba Pollard won.
That's right, yeah.
It feels like a lifetime ago.
It was.
Yeah, I mean, really, once NASCAR was going, like, I just completely, like, no other racing mattered to me. I did catch I finally caught a little bit of the big block racing at Volusia, but I can't even remember who the hell won at this point, so.
I'm just happy to have a weekend coming up where I don't have two TVs down in the bar with my laptop open, trying to pay attention to everything. It's exhausting. Yeah. I'm not complaining. It's an amazing time to be a racing fan, to be able to watch all of that in real time. But yeah, nice little break. I feel like I've earned it.
There were some darfs, though, obviously, with the racing season started. We already kind of talked about one of them, but Rob, you've got a couple that I actually didn't see until just now.
Yeah,
so
I screenshotted them, but I don't think I shared them because I was trying to, because they're so, it's Daytona, right? So like everyone comes out of the woodwork. You expect to see a lot. Ultimate 23 Dragon, she gets her own. Actually, no, we didn't talk about her, did we?
Not today, no.
No, so there's several Darfs of the week here. Ultimate 23 Dragon is the fucking, to make an ARCA reference, she's the Bobby Gerhart of being the Darf of the week. She just wins all the time. Always has wild shit to say. After the truck race on Friday night, she says, fuck Spire Motorsports. Gonna challenge Joe Gibbs Racing for the most hated team. Or Rick Hendrick. Why not? Shouldn't be surprised he endorsed yet another racist. Of course, Roger Carruth. This is funny. Roger Carruth is definitely in the Hendrick pipeline out there in the full-on Hendrick Cars paint scheme. He's definitely being mentored by that team, and I'm sure we'll see more out of him and Hendrick later on. And Roger is hanging out with fellow racist Bubba Wallace as well. What a surprise. Not. So she, I don't even want to give her trophies anymore because she just wins all of them. But I had to shine out that stupidity. That's good. Of course, Johnny Benson's number one fan. I'm sure there's a restraining order involved there. My other two favorites come from, there's another one, I think this came from Friday or Saturday when they were like talking about rain and all that. This guy, I didn't even get his full name on Instagram, but his handle is Kyle Busch, or Kyle number 8 Busch, big rowdy fan, I guess. He says, in reference to one of the races getting postponed, I couldn't tell you which one it was, "It seems like it's a rain out every year. It's a political thing to keep us in a football mood." Which, I don't know what the fuck that actually
means. What
does
that mean? What is a football?
So, again, you mentioned touching grass. This guy's being sentenced to just go out and touch some grass and take a deep breath. And my personal favorite out of all of this, I am a member of a lot of camping Facebook groups for racetracks on the internet. You know, they're a helpful resource if you are camping at the racetrack. The Loudon one is equal parts hilarious and very informative if you're in the shit on a race weekend. But I followed the Daytona one just because, you know, it's a shit show, and we had some friends down there. And this lady named Teresa Ann Roberts, poor thing, this is on a Sunday. I think this got posted about like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. "I thought the races was, period, going to be on it, must be raining. That's what the holdup is." And I immediately sent that to our friends down there. I was like, if you find this lady, bring her some fucking water, please. No idea what's going on. So I just hope that, you know, she had a few liquid IVs and is back to normal and actually got to see the 500. But those are my darves of the week. And again, I know there's plenty more. There was even one on, I think it was Thursday night. I'd already had one picked out. But then Brian let me know that it's actually just a high level, high art shit post account. So I won't even bother mentioning that one. But kudos to this guy for being so good at what he does. And what was your quote about that, Brian? That the best shit posts really make you think.
Yeah, they at least on Twitter, like the stuff that's just this is so fucking stupid. Like, you have to be kidding. And this was one of those things where it's like, yeah, it even fooled you. It took me about 3 seconds to realize it was a joke. But yeah, you were convinced.
I was. Oh, you're more of a shit poster than I am, that's for sure. But I was like, it's Thursday night. I've already got Darf of the Week for the next show. And you're like, not so fast, pal.
We also forgot to mention what Justin Allgaier said on his radio during the Xfinity Series race.
Oh, that's right. And I'm pretty sure this was our friends, because they're camping in that corner. On the radio, he says, "Someone in turn 3 has the most potent reefer I've ever smelled."
Okay, so I got a question. Like, where was he? Like, was there a red flag happening? Or, like, could he smell this from the car while they're running? Because, come on, motherfucker, I smoke a lot of weed, and yeah, it stinks, but I don't think you're gonna be able to smell it from inside of a race car. That's crazy. Well, unless you're like stopped next to it.
The campgrounds go right up to the interior fence, and there's people lined up, so it's possible, you know. And like a lot of the times under yellow, they're running down the yellow line and all that. So I don't think he was, you know, full bore 190 miles an hour, like, man, who's cooking over there, you know. I don't think that's what was going on, but I thought that was great, and I'm pretty sure that had something to do with people we know. So nice, get him a little contact high, you know.
Yep. Okay, so I guess that's gonna wrap up Daytona chat. So we did have a couple of videos of the week going into the Atlanta race weekend, and admittedly they were not the most deep and overall exciting videos, but just like I mentioned on the last show, I kind of am fascinated with fan cam footage a little bit, and mainly just because, especially before cell phones, like, nobody was bringing cameras into racetracks. No. Like, either you were a TV person or maybe a crew member that wanted to film some behind the scenes stuff, and once in a blue moon you'll see somebody who brought a camcorder in. And this footage, I don't know exactly where it came from or why this person was filming. It seems like they were with this one particular ARCA team that's featured in most of the footage, but basically, this is shot from Atlanta Motor Speedway on March 12th, 1999, which, or not, it was March 11th, 1999. It was like the practice and qualifying day for ARCA. There was cup qualifying, but it was mainly footage of this team, and I wrote down the name here. The number 9 team, which is driven by David Hall. He didn't make the race. And if you see the footage and you see his crew and you see him driving a Pontiac with Dodge sponsorship,
yes,
and also sponsorship by a thing called Frog's Fantasy Driving Experience, which Google did not give me any insight.
Well, that's actually the driver's.
That
that's the driver's business. He goes by Frog Hall.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So yeah, Frog Hall's where is it? Frog's Fantasy Driving Experience presented by Frog Hall. Yeah, in the number 9 car.
I definitely want to be taught by a guy that can't make an ARCA race.
Yeah. So. Those that cannot do teach, but
yeah. Yeah, this so the crew that he had with him pushing this car through, like, nobody had any uniforms on, nobody had nothing, like, just good old boys just helping out their buddy for the day. There was
one large man doing most of the pushing.
Yeah, there's that's what I was going to next. This very big guy in a completely gray outfit. I thought it was all denim, but I think he just had a gray shirt and light blue jeans on, so it looked all gray. Had a very sweet mullet, and he pretty much pushed the car all the way down pit road all by himself with two guys in the back kind of just holding the spoiler. So good work, pal. I hope you got paid that day.
Well, then he had to, like, lean up against the car and catch his breath for a minute.
So he just pushed several thousand pound stock car by himself.
The car itself makes its run and again doesn't make the race. You see a very brief couple seconds of Busch series practice, and then a shot of Mark Martin's Winn-Dixie car at the gas pumps, immediately into a shot of Mark's Valvoline car with a bunch of other Roush cars and Jeff Gordon's car and Ricky Rudd and a handful of others getting ready for, I'm assuming, practice that day. There is a spy shot of Dale Earnhardt getting interviewed, and the only interesting thing in these 10 seconds is he throws his gum over his car, like, just spits his gum into his hand and throws it over the car.
best part of the whole video.
And then, yeah, they show some pace laps for the ARCA race, and that's pretty much it. So, again, there's no sound, only 12-minute clip. If you're a real nerd like we are and just enjoy the minutia of racing and the ephemera of this type of footage, it's worth checking out. It's not going to waste too much of your time, but it's nothing great.
Also not the best window into that period of ARCA, but it's always been a meat grinder a little bit. A lot of inexperienced guys, but this was when ARCA really had its own set of drivers that were regulars and stars. There was a lot of them out there in this race. Bill Barrett, of course, the champion that year. None of these guys are really featured in the video at all.
No.
But this was the era of Frank Kimmel and Bobby Gerhard. Blaze Alexander's out there. Daryl Lanigan.
Kirk Shelmerdine was in there.
Yeah, Billy Venturini. All these names that you still kind of hear associated with the sport, but, like, if you watch ARCA now, you wouldn't know that they'd have anything to do with it when you see this kind of thing. It was a lot more of a legitimate series back in those days. And again, go down a wormhole on that one. But yeah, I love this fan cam stuff too. Again, bummer there's no audio. But when you come across these, you really do get to sort of see racing as a very real thing. Because if you just watch it on television, it seems disconnected from reality a little bit. Anything on television is like that, right? It's a TV show, you know. Obviously, it's live sports, but, you know, it doesn't come across the same way as some guy's shaky fucking handy cam that he brought into the garage. And anytime you come across these, it's a real treat to watch, even if there is no audio.
Yeah,
but there's a second part to this, Bram.
Yes, there is a second part to
this
it.
This is my favorite.
So I was digging up random Atlanta videos, and I found one that was just titled Atlanta Motor Speedway Knockout. And so it's a minute long clip. And
it's from 13 years ago.
13 years ago, and it's not a NASCAR race. All it says is Friday Night Drags at Atlanta. Ashley, do you know anything about that?
I've never been to it, but yeah.
What is it though? Like, is it on the pit road or what the hell is it? Because they're in the track, clearly. They're not, like, at a drag strip.
Yeah, I don't know, because there isn't a drag strip there. So, I've just heard that promoted over the years, but I gotta assume
it's like a street racing thing or something, but regardless, we're not here for anything to do with cars, so
not at all.
This clip, so it's a fight clip, and I had to watch it like six times to kind of get a semblance of what the hell was going on. So there's four guys here. There's a guy in a white shirt and an Atlanta Braves hat, backwards, and then a big guy and a big guy in like one of those 2000s sort of Ed Hardy foil print type shirts. It's white with blue print, and then next to him there's a skinny shirtless guy, and then another guy in a blue wife beater who's also a big motherfucker. And
all in wearing cargo shorts.
All wearing cargo shorts. And we'll also mention him because he plays into the end of this video. There's a guy kind of watching from the corner that looks like a I don't know how to describe him, but he's a Richard Petty variant.
A Dollar General Richard Petty.
Poor man's Richard Petty.
Yeah, and he's lingering in the corner. He's clearly friends with a couple of these guys, and it takes a second to figure out who he's aligned to. But the Braves hat and the big white shirt dickhead, they start fighting. And, you know, the big guy got to have at least 60, 75 pounds on him and 6 inches. So that fight does not go very well. Meanwhile, the guys next to him, and I figured this out after the fact, it was Atlanta Braves hat and the shirtless guy. No, wait. Did you catch who was aligned here? Because I fucking wrote this down. Now I'm getting confused.
No, no, it's just some...
The blue shirt, the guy in the blue shirt and the Atlanta hat are together. It's the big white guy and the shirtless guy. Those are the ones that are together. So again, the first fight's happening. The big white guy in the white shirt's beating the shit out of the other guy. The other two guys try to intervene, and out of the corner of your eye, old Dollar General Richard starts to kind of pull off the one guy from the Atlanta Braves hat guy who's getting his ass kicked, and he's not really doing much other than literally just trying to pull him off. And blue wife beater gets pissed off. Poor Richard tries to just calm him down, immediately gets knocked out, like, to the fucking ground, cold, like, over and done
night,
with.
Night.
And that's pretty much it. After the fact that that happens and the guys get split up and Richard is left there by himself on the ground and the other two guys run off into the crowd, and that's it. So,
The hallmark of any good fight video, though, is the commentary. And this has some top tier, and you know, I'm gonna assume it was just a black dude, just by the way he was talking. You know, I don't mean to, you know, be insensitive or anything, but like all great fight videos have commentary from a black man, or most of them do. And this one is top tier. It's so good, and you know, you're probably gonna lose this situation if you got somebody standing around talking like this guy was. So I don't know how they didn't know, just to shake hands and move along, because it didn't end well. And this guy definitely called it, and I laughed so hard and watched this so many times. Not my favorite video of the week by any means, but please watch this.
It's so good,
man.
Something different. I'm gonna try to make this season interesting and not just old race broadcasts and recap shows and whatnot.
Fights and video without audio now from now on.
So this weekend, you know, NASCAR. Well, obviously not this coming weekend, but next week. NASCAR will be in Las Vegas, and you know, I was trying to think of what to watch for the show next week, and my first thought that popped in my head is like, you know what, let's, you know, Vegas is the home of the Bush Brothers, let's try to find some cool Bush Brothers footage. And you know, I looked for a second, and then I thought to myself, who else lives in Las Vegas? And it was then that I remembered that the Pawn Stars guys live in Las Vegas, and from time to time, the Pawn Stars guys will get some NASCAR memorabilia that wanders into their shop, and they talk about it and evaluate it and whatnot. So for next week, we're going to watch a little montage of a handful of different items being brought into the Pawn Stars shop and talked about by the guys, and I will give you my expert analysis as to the values and authenticities and all that stuff. And I haven't picked out the clips. There's a bunch of different ones. And, like, there's not, like, a NASCAR-specific episode of this show. It's just kind of like, oh, this guy brought in a driver's suit or whatever. So they're all, like, three-minute clips. So I'm going to pick, like, four or five clips that we'll talk about. So I haven't figured out which ones exactly I'm going to use. So check back, like, tonight or tomorrow for that playlist, and they'll be up there. But NASCAR Pawn Stars next week on the show.
Hell yeah.
So this is, like, the QVC episode.
It's in that vein, but this will be much more entertaining and a whole lot shorter. I'm talking like 15 minutes worth of your time as opposed to two hours. So, yeah.
True Love just sent us a link over for the Friday Night Drags here in Atlanta. It just looks like spectator drags on the front stretch, which is pretty cool.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Sounds fun.
Cool. All right, folks. Well, with that, is there any other, you know, final things we want to talk about before we say goodbye for this week?
No, just another round of plate racing coming up. I'm excited to hear True Love's report. It's always good to have boots on the ground at the racetrack, and True Love will not be wearing Crocs. It's too early for that, so I assume it'll be boots.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will be at the next two races, so.
Oh, yeah, you're going to Vegas, too.
I am going to Vegas.
Oh,
maybe
that's
I'll
right,
pop in the Pawn Stars and see.
How about it? Oh, one more point to go back to the 500. I know we're done talking about it, but I just have it on in the background here in the bar. People are pissed at William Byron because he actually caused the wreck that set off that final restart. So that's when people are pissed at William Byron at wrecking. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Alex Bowman gave him kind of a weird shove, and he hooked somebody, and that was Brad Keselowski is who he hooked. And that put him in position to win the race.
Right.
So that's what that was. Yeah.
I didn't really blame Byron for that.
No, not really. He didn't do it on purpose, but still. The fact that Joey Logano was very vocal about it, now that we're talking about it, he did say something in the media about how it's a bummer that the guy who causes the wreck goes on to win it, but that's just how it goes at Daytona. So.
Okay, Joey, like you have a foot to stand on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some definitely pot calling the kettle black business there, but.
Yeah.
Is what it is. Daytona's over, Atlanta. Game over.
I'm going to see
folks,
how far this pawn shop is from my hotel that I'm staying at.
Fuck yeah.
Okay, I haven't been to Vegas in 10 years, but I remember it being like way the hell out of the way, and all that I've heard about it is it's not at all like the show, obviously. Like those guys aren't there. Like they have like a room where you go in and see all the TV shit, but it's definitely not necessarily a place you would want to go out of your way to see.
Right. Yeah.
But we'll see enough of it next week. So
it's too far. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, with that, folks, that'll wrap up our trip to Applebee's this week. As always, you can follow us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram and Meet Me at the Bees on Twitter. Rob came up with a new logo that I think debuted with last week's episode, so you can check that out there, and maybe we'll eventually get some stickers, and they'll get C&D'd, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm asking for it these days.
Yeah. As always, you can follow me at Speedway Screens on all the things, and my shop is speedwaytsj.etsy.com. True Love is too busy gallivanting around to TV tapings and races to change her Instagram handle name.
Yeah,
so
you can catch her on Fox and FS1 during rain delays. So.
And Rob, I don't know if you have any new plugs from last week other than your upcoming tour.
Yeah, we're going out on tour. I'll say the dates today. These Wild Plans going out with Charlie Marie. It's going to be a really great tour. Starting March 16th, we'll be in Philly at Baby's First Rodeo at Ortlieb's. That's always a fun night. Warren, Rhode Island at the Galactic on March 17th. I'll be at Skinny Dennis in Brooklyn. That's a fun little bar, too, on the 19th. My favorite bar in the world at March 21st, Charlotte, North Carolina at the Thirsty Fucking Beaver. Come on out, y'all. The next night, Richmond, Virginia, Get Tight Lounge with Mackenzie Rourke. She's a great singer, too. Again, that's March 22nd. And then we'll wrap it up at Dirty Nelly's in Charlottesville on the 23rd. That's a Saturday. So those dates are coming up if you want to come out and say hi. I know we got a couple friends already pledged they're going to come and get Rob drunk and get drunk with Rob and come have a good time. So we'd love to see you out there. Again, Charlie Marie's a great singer, and you don't want to miss her while she's still playing these tiny-ass little rooms like we usually do. So.
Yeah, whenever Rob gets anywhere within 3 hours of Cleveland, I will finally get to see his band.
Fuck
so
yeah.
I'm just waiting for that.
Working
so.
On it.
All right, folks. With that, our check is here. So thank you again for joining us at Applebee's, and we will talk to you next week.